Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. And today, I do not have a co-host, but I've got a special guest in the podcast room, Mr. Mark McKinney, CEO of Jackson County REMC. Mark, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Doing awesome. Doing great. Well, and even though we don't have my co-host with us, Jeff is down at the Southwestern Fertilizer Conference, but we still got to do the question of the day. And the question of the day is, what trip is on your bucket list that you haven't taken yet, and why haven't you?
A trip that's on my bucket list would be...
Well, what is something, I guess? Could be a trip, I guess.
It is a trip.
All right.
So that trip would be to go out and see Yellowstone.
Oh.
And then possibly head on down to the Grand Canyon and then see everything that's in between from Brownstown all the way out there and back. I'd like to do that. And the only thing keeping me from doing it is taking time to do it.
That's it. I mean, do you camp or do you have a camper or anything like that?
I do not.
No,
no,
that's probably better.
Just like to do a road trip and head out and be able to do whatever we want, whenever we want.
That would be nice. I tell you, that would be the Grand Canyon. It is bigger than you think it would be. Once you see it, it's like one of those where you can't really focus on it because it's so big. It's like you have no depth perception. Mm-hmm. And I thought you could wave at people on the other side. And I was in the Marines out in Southern California, and we got a chance to see it. And I mean, I was like, wow, could not believe how huge it was. Mm-hmm. But that's good. Mine would be to, I'd really like to go to Israel. But obviously what's keeping me now, probably beforehand, was just the time and the expense. But not a very safe place to be at the moment. But I would like to go over there and kind of just see all the history and the biblical history, of course, and everything. But that would be a bucket list item for me.
Okay.
But so slowly kind of checking a few places off, but I think you just got to take vacation and go do it sometime, Mark.
That's right.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, what your CEO, and tell us how you kind of got there, your career path and journey. And then we'll talk a little bit about REMC.
Okay. Well, my name is Mark McKinney. I'm the CEO of Jackson County REMC. I am married to my wife, Joyce, who was my high school sweetheart, who went to school in Brownstown. I grew up in Seymour. We have three kids. We have four grandkids and another grandkid on the way.
Awesome.
So we're looking forward to that.
Good deal.
Started out my career working for Motorola up in Chicago, Illinois, and then working for Motorola in Lafayette, Indiana. And my wife and I decided we'd like to get back home. We had two small kids, and we were up there without any family, and we just wanted to get back home.
Oh, yeah, because you guys were in the city?
We were in Lafayette.
Okay.
Yeah, so REMC offered me a job as a meter man in the meter shop. And so 30 years ago, I took that offer and...
Fixing them or checking them?
Testing and repairing and installing. And so we took that opportunity and we moved back home, which is the greatest thing we've done. And had an opportunity to work in the operations and engineering department to oversee all the automated distribution equipment that we have and put in an automatic meter reading system to get away from members self-reading their meters and filling out a postcard.
Yeah, we used to have to, you'd send your bill in and somebody have to go check the meter.
Right.
And then you would write in how much, and that was how we checked it.
That's right. So we put the automatic meter reading system in. And then a few years later, I had an opportunity to go work with Jed Wheatley as a project manager. Jed was the CEO at that time, and I worked with him for several years. And then when he retired, I put my name in the hat and I was offered the job. In the meantime, I went back to school, got a master's degree and a bachelor's degree from Purdue.
Good.
And that put me in a position to at least be eligible to apply. And they offered me the job 11 years ago, and I've been the CEO since.
Well, good deal. That's a neat. That is, well, tell us a little bit. That's a very interesting career path. You've done about everything then at the REMC. Was you ever a lineman?
I never was a lineman, but just like the lineman, I did have to wear FR green. We called them the greens. They were the green uniforms. So some of the people there are fewer each year that knew me when I was in the meter shop, but there's still a handful around that do, and they still know me just as Mark.
Yep. So tell us a little bit about a rural electric cooperative and what that is.
Okay. Well, first of all, rural electric cooperatives are member owned. Not-for-profit, and local control. What I mean by local control is we have a board of directors that are members as well, and they're elected by the membership. But back in the 1930s, about 90% of rural America did not have access to electricity.
Wow.
And then in 1935, President Roosevelt created... Rural Electrification Administration, or they called them the REA. And the REA provided low-interest loans to local communities to start... developing an electric cooperative. And I remember my wife's grandmother telling the story when she was young, they were going knocking door to door to try to collect $5 in your membership fee so they could start raising some capital for the co-op. And since then, there are about 600, I'm sorry.
How many?
900 different cooperatives around the country.
Electric
cooperatives serving 42 million people.
I'm going to make a note. That's interesting.
And like many co-ops, just like Jackson County, RMC has done, they've undertaken a broadband project, provide fiber optic broadband to their members. Similar to back in the 30s, when the investor-owned utilities did not see an opportunity for their investment to return revenue to build out in rural areas. That's a similar story we have today with a fiber optic broadband expansion. And so the co-ops have stepped up all across the country and started serving fiber optic broadband to their members.
Which kind of makes sense because you've already got the infrastructure, right? I mean, you've got the poles, you're out, you've got a kind of a service. There's different people, but now you're on the same poles. So you put the fiber optic lines on the same poles for the most part.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're able to leverage that electric plant investment that's already in place and then just hang our fiber optic cable on that. And within our service territory, we've been able to provide service to almost all of our members. By the end of this fall, there's a section in Jennings County where we have yet to complete. But by the end of this year, every member in Jackson County RMC service territory will have access to fiber.
That's an amazing accomplishment. Did that pretty quickly, too, right? I mean, just within a few years.
So the first member we connected was May of 2018. And today we have 13,300 members connected.
That's it's pretty neat that we went from not that long ago to not having power across, you know, 90% of the rural America. Mm-hmm. And now we're hooking up high speed internet, going for power distribution and to high speed internet. So you and I were kind of texting a little bit some time back, and just all the challenges about keeping power on in rural communities whenever storms come through and things like that. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about, it seems like, I'll kind of give a short story. I mean, there's been a lot of times I used to travel, do some light travel across Ohio and northern Indiana, and I'd find myself out of the territory a little bit, and maybe there was something happened. I mean, we had a few issues. One time a pole got crossways, or well, I forget what happened, but I mean, the service team was out there so quickly, and I mean, they had to come all the way from Brownstown, which isn't that far, but mm-hmm. I was just amazed that they could get out and get repairs done that quickly. What all's involved with kind of keeping that many folks and equipment on staff, I guess, to keep power on?
Yeah, there are a lot of different challenges. I didn't mention that we have 25,300 electric accounts.
25,300.
We serve parts of 10 counties, 2,900 miles of power line, 2,400 miles of fiber optic cable. But to answer your question, some of the challenges we occur, basically, you know, you look in the rural areas, just some of the terrain that we serve. You have river bottoms through Jackson County. Do you have hills and hollers in Lawrence and Washington County? Yeah. And then a lot of trees.
Trees
are our number one thing. And we spend a lot of money every year to maintain our right of way. But even though we do a clearing of 20 feet on each side of our power line, that doesn't stop a 100-foot dead ash tree from falling down, taking the power out.
Well, that's had to be a problem in the last 10, 15 years.
It has been. That's probably been our number one problem, these dead ash trees. But trees are our number one issue as far as the causes of outages.
Okay.
But we're used to that. And we have a dedicated team of employees that when a storm rolls through, they rally together and they come in and then we just get it done.
And at some time, probably go help other communities.
We have sent other crews to help other co-ops around. There's a mutual aid agreement with the statewide association in Indiana to where if we have some crews available that can be freed up to head to whatever co-op. There are 38 co-ops in Indiana, electric co-ops. And so that opportunity exists to go help. But our footprint is so big in southern Indiana, pretty much anything south of Indianapolis is going to hit us, it seems like.
Yeah.
And we've had four major storms already this year. And I give credit to the money we spend on a right-of-way, $3-4 million a year to maintain our right-of-way. We do a four-year trim cycle
Also, and that's where a crew comes in and just kind of gives the trees a haircut.
Correct.
Try to get things away from the power line.
Right. So they'll come in and do whatever. We actually, speaking of that, we used a helicopter for the first time down around the Leesville area to go through and trim the right of way.
I'll be darned.
But yeah, we do a 4-year trim cycle, then come back in the next year and spray. But that right of way program, one, it allows our guys to get to the down line or something easier. They don't have to fight their way to get there. Our distribution automation that we've invested in allows us to get the power on quicker when we have the opportunity to either switch a line to feed it from a different direction or a different substation versus having a man come in, roll a truck and get down to the location and identify it. We can do some of that from the office.
So how does that, so if there's an outage, you can actually move the power around?
Yes. Yeah, so let's say a transmission line goes out and the next substation to it is still on. We can tie that substation together through our distribution network and then get the lights back on for those people until the transmission line is repaired. And then we'll switch it back to normal.
That's remarkable. And of course, so we take it for granted. We take the electricity for granted. And then whenever it's not on, you know, we've all experienced, you go into a room and you know the power is off, but you still, it's such a habit to switch the light on. But farmers, power is so important because with livestock, you know, we have so much, of course, with our hog barns and chicken houses, turkey houses, and all the livestock. And a lot of farmers have, almost all of them would have their own backup generators in case of emergencies where they can keep the water going and stuff. What's some of the watch outs that people should be aware of that do have backup generators? And I know I was on the website, so it's kind of a leading question, but for folks that are going to install some sort of backup generation power system, what do they need to do first?
They really should contact us.
Yeah.
The key to that is we offer products, whether it be at a residential level or at a commercial level or a farm level, where we could put in generator transfer switches. So those generators do not backfeed on our lines and impair the safety of our linemen out there doing the work. Because that'd be the last thing you'd want is to backfeed and our guys come through and think the line is dead, even though they test and ground and everything, someone fire a generator up and cause an injury or a life-changing event.
Oh, yeah.
That's the biggest concern is just to make sure it doesn't backfeed.
Yeah, because that could happen so quick. Mm-hmm. And so the main thing is whether your farm or your household is just to get your RMC involved, get your power company involved, and let them know what you're doing and what kind of switch you're going to be putting on. Mm-hmm. You got folks that'll help.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, that seems like, I know now I kind of, people may not know where their power comes from. So where does our electricity in these 10 counties, where does the most of it come from?
So we buy our power from Hoosier Energy. They're located in Bloomington, Indiana, and they're a cooperative as well. They're our generation and transmission cooperative. So they own the generating resources or have the purchase power agreements with different providers and then the transmission line to get it to our distribution substations. And then we take it from there.
Okay.
I have some statistics here.
While you're looking at,
yeah.
So that would be kind of like, so they're a cooperative. That'd be kind of like a regional cooperative. So Premier Ag is farmer member owned also. And then we also have memberships or ownership in regional cooperatives. So does REMC own a member of in some sort of way? Is that how that works with the ownership?
Just like what you explained, we're one of the 17 members of Hoosier Energy.
Okay.
So 16 co-ops are in Southern Indiana, and then there is one co-op in Illinois. But you had asked about where the power comes from. In 2023, 60% of our power was generated by coal, 31% by natural gas, and then 9% from renewable sources.
In 23.
Mm-hmm. So recently, just this year, Hoosier Energy purchased a gas generation facility up by South Bend. And they're also in a purchase power agreement with a nuclear power plant called Palisades in Michigan that's getting restarted. It's one of the first nuclear sites that was shut down. And now through the federal government with some help there, they're going to restart that nuclear power plant. And so it's projected by 2030, 51% of our power will be generated by natural gas. 35% of our power will be generated by nuclear, 9% renewables, and only 5% will be generated with coal.
And the biggest increase then, of course, will be the natural gas and nuclear.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. It'd be the biggest portion of the portfolio that Hoosier Energy, when they sell us the power that is generated by.
And I'm not an expert by any means, but nuclear seems to be the cleanest, other than storage of the byproduct, the waste of some kind, which it always seems kind of interesting to me that you could have aircraft carriers and submarines that were nuclear powered, but it seems like we could put those facilities or build a small one or something. But I didn't know that we were getting ready to start one back up.
Yes. So the new term is called an SMR. It's a small modular reactor. So they're looking at small, like you're talking about, that may be on a battleship, small 10, 15, 20 megawatt nuclear power plants, about the size of a semi trailer.
Yeah.
They can park it next to a substation. Doesn't require water to cool, pretty much self-contained. Some of them could even be buried underground. And so that technology, Indiana's legislature just passed a bill and signed into law this year to help promote that development in the state of Indiana. At our Hoosier Energy board meeting yesterday, if you were to start today, it'll probably be 10 years before one of those things come online.
10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You would think they would kind of have those already, since it, but I guess those would be military. How much power would one of those, I mean, get kind of in the scope of a county, like a 20 megawatts, or how much would, how much area, I guess, would one cover, depending on the usage, obviously, but
a lot of our substations are around 20 megawatts.
Wow.
And so, you know, while they're not all fully loaded, you're looking at a few thousand homes that are That's connected amazing. To that. So I would say easily a few thousand homes could be powered by that.
And I really like the idea of how in 2030, it's just going to be shifting around a lot, and that the renewables, I was kind of surprised it was 9% was that high in Indiana, because we don't really have a good area for sun. I mean, we're not like Southern California.
Right.
And we don't have, it blows, the wind blows a lot, but it seems like it comes through in a thunderstorm, and then it's down to 3 or 4 miles an hour again, unless we're trying to spray, of course, and then it's 20 right. miles an hour. But do you not see a lot of path forward for solar or wind to increase in renewables? I don't know. That's kind of an opinion, really.
Yeah, the 9% we have are typically through purchase power agreements, where we're buying them from a wind farm, like in northern Indiana or northern okay. Illinois, or a solar project somewhere.
Not that we generated here.
Correct. So it's typically through purchase power agreements. There is a place for renewables, whether it be solar or wind. Solar or wind are considered intermittent sources. They're not going to replace base load like natural gas, yeah. nuclear, or coal that's running 24/7. But I think as battery technologies develop, I think you'll see more opportunities for the batteries to store those intermittent generation yeah. facilities, and then utilize those during the time when the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing.
That's interesting. I never thought about, you know, that intermittent compared to the consistency of natural gas, which, as we have, you know, we're trying to, all of our Country Mark fuel energy comes out of Southern Illinois and out through that way. So it's all domestic produced. I think a byproduct of that is natural gas. So how do you, I want to make sure I asked one of these questions. How do you balance just keeping electricity affordable and plentiful, and balance that with investing in the infrastructure to keep all that together? I mean, how do you, that seems like that's got to be a pretty fine line every year to walk.
That's a great question. The example I give is a mile of line is a mile of line, whether it's in rural Indiana or Seymour, Indiana.
It doesn't basically. Care. Yeah.
That cost for that mile of overhead line is about $100,000. And so we spread that cost over 8 members per mile, where in the urban areas, they may have 40 people per mile.
Wow.
So you can see how yeah. cost plays a role in everything we do, because there are only so many people who could spread that cost over. I get asked all the time, well, why don't you just put all your power lines underground? That would eliminate all the outages, and you wouldn't have any issues with trees. That's true, but how much do those 8 members per mile want to pay? So while I mentioned an overhead line is about $100,000 a mile, an underground line can be anywhere from 2 to 3 times that per mile. And so that seems like a quick and easy fix, but then you have to ask those 8 members per mile. Now you need to convert your overhead service to connect to our underground service. So there's also going to be cost associated with that.
It's not that simple.
It's not that simple.
It's just a math problem, isn't it?
It really is.
And then obviously you're like the rest of us. You try to find good people. And I have a good friend of mine that's he's a CEO of another Orange County RMC. And he said that I'll get it wrong, so I'm not going to attribute it directly to him, but basically whenever someone's interviewing for a lineman position, if they ask how much it pays, that's probably the wrong person. You know, a lineman is a special type of person. So tell us how you find good employees and how do you source those and where would one start, I guess?
So, we've been very fortunate to not really have some of the issues that other co-ops have had across the state, more in the urban zones than anything. But I think Jackson County RMC has a good reputation for being a good employer, and we do not have an issue getting applicants for openings.
Good.
You mentioned linemen. All the linemen we hire are pretty much local, so they stay. Good. And you're right. If they're coming in for the pay, while the pay is very good, you got to be prepared for a day like today when it's 90 degrees and 95% humidity, or a day when it's 0 degrees and 20-mile, 30-mile-an-hour winds. So there's more to it. You're right. They're a different breed of cat.
Yeah.
But that's what they love. And while money does play a role, it's not in everything. So I think the fact that we offer a culture that's family friendly and an opportunity for people to have advancements. We don't have a lot of layers to move up and down in our organization, but we do have layers. And if you do your time and you do what's needed to get it, you need to be prepared for when those opportunities present themselves.
That sounds similar to Premier Ag at Premier Companies. As got to remember, we're not just an agronomy company. We've got Premier Energy also, but there may not be a lot of layers for advancement, but we try to make it a place where you can expand what you do.
Yes.
You can always learn and get involved in other parts of the company, you know, especially parts of your division, certainly. Mm-hmm. So,
and technology plays a role in that too, because technology, like I mentioned, members read their meters when I started to today, where we can get a meter reading within a few seconds. So being able to put yourself and pick up those additional responsibilities as technology changes, and technology affects every employee at the co-op.
Everyone. That's correct. Well, are there any other topics that you'd like to make sure we cover? Cause I know one thing, I was tell my wife that I was going to be talking with you today in the RMC, and she goes, boy, they do a good job, you know. And it's funny, the different experiences one person thinks is power to the farm, and another homeowner might think is their internet service. So it's kind of neat, the different niches, I guess, that you all feel.
Yeah. You had mentioned member satisfaction.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Hoosier Energy does for its member co-ops is do a customer satisfaction survey every 2 years. And so they do that survey. And the last one they did was in 2023. And we scored an 85 out of 100. And the Hoosier Energy average between all 17 member co-ops was 81.
Great.
The investor-owned utilities averaged 72. So I think the difference, one of the other differences is our core mission is to serve our members. It is not, while we do have to generate margins, that's not the whole focus to please shareholders. Our focus is to serve our membership. And I think that shows in some of these scores when you compare a co-op to an investor-owned utility, just a different focus on why we exist.
You know, it is different. When you've got a board member that you know that you don't, you can find out more, you know? I mean, you've got a board member that you can kind of question, and he can explain things, you know? So you've got this your board out there similar to ours, and so you have representation, not necessarily representation, but you have a representative for the community that's leading the company. And that's a neat structure.
We have a great board. We have 9 directors that from for each of the 9 districts in our service territory. every year, three of those directors are up for election for a 3-year term. And so we have one director that we're going to recognize at our annual meeting Thursday, who's served 50 years as a wow. director. And so
boy, he has seen some changes.
He has seen a lot of changes, and but he's on top of it and he loves it. And you know him very well. So looking forward to giving him a plaque and recognizing him Thursday night at our annual meeting.
That's awesome. I'll have to tell him congratulations. Mm-hmm. All right. If there's not anything else, Mark, I don't know, we're going to think of something as soon as we get off, but we can have you back. I know Jeff, my co-host, would sure like to have been in on the conversation. He always asks some really good questions that I don't think of, but really appreciate you joining us today and keeping the power on and all the folks at REMC, keeping the power on to all the farms and the households throughout our territory.
Well, you're welcome. And I do have one comment, if that's okay.
Sure.
You'd asked, what was I most proud of during my tenure at Jackson County
right. REMC? Yeah.
And, you know, while I'm proud of a lot of the technology enhancements we've made through automatic meter reading and distribution automation, I have to say what I'm most proud of is in 2017, when our board decided to do a fiber optic broadband project. And that was going out on a leap of faith. We were one of the first few co-ops in the country to take wow. that step. And here we are today, after 2024, we actually had positive margins 7 years ahead of schedule. And so,
and it's already in the black.
It's already, well, we still have negative overall.
Okay,
margins,
sure. Yeah. If you
looked at your operating revenue and everything for yep. 1 year, but the fact that I mentioned every employee was affected by this fiber optic project, that they all came together. I told them this is going to be hard.
Yeah.
And, every employee there stepped up and made this happen. So I give the, what I'm proud of are how the employees stepped up and we deployed a project that, is changing members' lives.
You know, I should have thought of this, but I talked to other friends, you know, in Ohio and Minnesota, other parts, and everyone's out in the middle of nowhere, right? I mean, our network of folks, we all live out in the country, and I try to tell them that we got a fiber optic line that runs right down. They're like, "How? What?" Mm-hmm. You know, and we are fortunate and take it for granted, because there's so many places in the country where there is no internet access. There's barely any cell phone coverage.
Correct.
And it's just, that's really neat that in 2017 and then to have it, how many members are on your fiber optic service now? Do you know?
Out of the 20,000 some members, we have 13,300 wow. that's taking service.
Over half of the membership.
That's 64%, I believe, is that's what neat. The number was.
That's yeah. amazing. Awesome. All right. Well, Mark, thank you for joining us today, and we appreciate it and appreciate you keeping the lights on. And that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.